We had been waiting for the train this week. Well, here it comes.
Okay, kid, out loud now so as I can hear what you're saying.
I'm checking the passages, getting on and off.
Uh-huh.
Front and back.
Yeah.
Shutting the doors. Rear section first, then the front section.
All right, those are sounds from the 1974 movie Taking of Pelham 123. The same week that we've been looking at American cities embracing the rail, the latest blockbuster to hit movie screens today features a train in a starring role. It's the remake of that film, which starred Walter Matthau in a New York City subway. The new movie sounds more like this.
Control center, call them Pelham 123.
Rail control center, do you read me?
Who is this?
This is the man who is going to give this city a run for its money.
Woo! Now, if the old train sounds like a steel factory, the new one sounds more like a laptop.
In space.
Tony Scott has taken a look at both of them. He's a film critic for our partner, The New York Times. How are you?
Good.
Great.
Not
to
be
confused
with
the Tony Scott, who's the director of this film, the remake.
Ooh, spooky.
Not a conflict of interest.
Do you get checks redirected to your home address?
Unfortunately. But I like to say that around my house, he's known as the other Tony Scott, and around his house, I'm known as who?
All right. Well, speaking of who's starring in whose life, is The Train better than John Travolta, who plays the bad guy?
Well, The Train is one of those impressive new kind of stainless steel and aluminum, very shiny talking trains with the digital display. It gets hijacked by John Travolta and his gang of thugs whose motives are murky for a while, just who this guy is and what he's doing and what he thinks he's going to get away with. I have to say he's pretty good. You know, he does his kind of overacting bad guy, chomping at the bit kind of thing. But it's a nice contrast, him and Denzel Washington, who is very sort of cool, playing what was the Walter Matthau part. In this case, an MTA. Walter Matthau was a transit cop. Denzel Washington, whose character is named Walter Garber in tribute to Walter Matthau, I think, is an MTA employee who's been demoted to dispatcher. So he's sitting in this big high-tech command center watching the trains on a digital display. And it does emphasize how much the subway system has changed in 35 years from this kind of rickety, falling apart, crumbling symbol of New York's decline
to this futuristic, crumbling, falling apart system of New York's decline.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny that you mention the way things have changed so profoundly because, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the original. I have not yet seen this new movie, but in the original, we see the character that Denzel plays in the remake, and this is Walter Matthau giving a tour to Japanese dignitaries.
New York City subway system is the largest in the world. 7,000 cars, 237 miles of track. Right over here, the status board pinpoints the disposition of every transit authority patrolman presently in the field. That's it. Get a good shot of that. Things are usually jumping pretty good in here.
Oh, man. Those were the days. You know, it's just like we have this machine. And, you know, when you talk about not just the machine, but we've been talking, John, all week about cities.
Sure.
What does this remake say about New York as a city? Do we see echoes of a post 9/11 New York? How do they play that card?
I think we do. I mean, I think that it's an index of how the anxieties of the city have shifted. You know, in the 1970s, it was crime and street crime that was making people anxious, getting mugged on the subway. And now it's much more about, you know, being blown up by terrorists. And in fact, the assumption when this gang takes over the subway train is that they're terrorists. Are they terrorists? Are you terrorists? What do you want? There's an interesting twist when you find out who they were that I think also goes to a change in the identity of the city. Because one of the things that's most interesting about this movie, I think, it's a very straight-ahead sort of action thriller, but
which is great, we need that.
Very well executed, and the other Tony Scott is a master at this kind of, you know, kinetic fast
OTS, call him, yeah.
But what's sort of interesting is that it does have some sly comments to make about not just post 9/11 New York, but the New York that's been dominated by Wall Street, money culture, hedge funds, and there's a sort of intimation of what comes after that and what the sort of the fallout or the consequences of that have been.
I'm just wondering, in pure movie terms, and maybe you share this or not, but is the taking of a subway car as a plot idea any less ridiculous in this movie than it was in the original? And I love the original, too.
No. Okay. And it's sort of the fun of it. It's like, it's always been part of the movie itself. Both of the movies say, what are these guys? What, a subway train? What are they going to do with a subway train?
So it's in a way. Or get away from taking over a train for a while. Remember, there was the teenage joyrider who took over a subway train?
Yes, who was obsessed with, who was an aspiring motorman. Who was obsessed with it. But
I digress.
The sort of, because the question in both cases is, how are these guys going to get away? It's a closed system. It's bounded on all sides. You can't, take your subway to Cuba or Algeria.
You remember in Speed, Keanu Reeves had the whole subway pop out of terra firma, man. What you talking about?
Gotta make it to Westchester. That's all.
Exactly.
Coney Island.
Here's one thing that I noticed was that in the original, the demand was $1 million for all the hostages and the train.
Right.
Now in the remake, the demand is for $1 million per hostage.
Well,
that's inflation.
It's prorated for $10 million. Which, and there's a reason for this, because the hijacker knows that this is the amount of money that the city can get its hands on and give to him. But there's a twist to that too, because $10 million. I mean, the inflation in 35 years isn't just tenfold; it's a lot more than that. So it's sort of a bait and switch thing. The $10 million is the explicit demand, but actually he's got a scheme to make much, 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 much more. We're talking about what's $10 million
in the Madoff world,
right?
Well, this is the kind of thing that we just love talking about, is the intersection of pop culture and reality. Do you think that this is escapism, reality, or both?
Well, I think it's both. I think the best movies always are. They take you to some completely imaginary, crazy place and situation, and then, but keep some contact with reality. So the best kind of Hollywood popcorn blockbuster movies for me are the ones that get you thinking a little bit as you leave the theater after being, wowed by the spectacle.
All right. Tony Scott, otherwise known as the Tony Scott, not the other Tony Scott, from the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Great to be here.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.